One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.
Today's episode of The Grave Talks is brought to you by Best Fiends. Download Best Fiends free today on the Apple App Store or Google Play. That's friends without the R, Best Fiends. Today on The Grave Talks, Light in the Dark, a conversation with James Cloud. From generation to generation, James Cloud's family has had a close relationship with the paranormal. Family stories that date back more than 100 years. Relatives who are physically removing dark entities from threatening others. Strange visits from unknown entities in an open field to an unexplained abduction of James at the age of 4. These encounters have followed and led James in a journey of trying to help not only himself understand what's going on, but to help others make sense and get through the unknown encounters that many of us face. Along with his team of the Paranormal Research Investigators of St. Michael.
Well, for me, my entire family line has had paranormal experiences. We've also, to use regular nomenclature, it's like a family lineage of psychics. But I don't personally like the word psychic because it has odd connotations sometimes.
Sure.
And so, my mom, her mom, one of the earliest stories I remember hearing as a child was my grandmother and my great-grandmother were laying in bed together. And this was when my grandmother was 4 or so. So it would have been in the late 1910s, okay, I would assume. And so my grandmother was laying next to her mom. And her mom heard my grandmother kind of choking, being fitful in bed next to her. So she rolled over to see, didn't know if she was choking or what was going on. And she rolled over and there was this black misty mass hovering over her, choking her. And my great grandmother was able, when she saw this, she instinctively reached out to get it off of my grandmother. And she was actually able to grab this. And from what, as it was described, it was like a spongy feel. Mm-hmm. And she whipped it off of my grandmother and threw it against the far wall. And it hit the wall and let out a shriek and then slipped into the floorboard and disappeared. And so my grandmother, my all the way down my maternal line, but also my paternal line, has had these kind of experiences. A story my grandmother, my dad's mom, told when she was a kid. She was walking along the San Joaquin Delta down in California with her brothers. And she, it was a normal day, didn't expect nothing. But as she looked into the Delta itself, the water, she saw a casket rise out of the water, and it opened, and her dad was in the casket, my great-grandfather. Mm-hmm. And she was pretty freaked out about it, so she went home and told her mom, and her mom goes, "Oh, don't tell your dad, that means he's gonna die." So, so what happened the next day, he died.
Oh my god.
And So these are the type of things that have naturally been a part of the bloodlines. And I have some pretty rare bloodlines, apparently, from what I did research. But that's a different topic, I suppose. But my personal adventure, if you will, into supernatural, paranormal, all sorts of craziness, started when I was 4 years old. And this is actually a UFO-based event. Mm-hmm. So it's not ghosts, but it was and is kind of the seminal event in my life that sparked everything that followed. The year was 1976. We were living in Pine Grove, California, and my grandparents had come to visit us at our home there in Pine Grove. And I remember, you know, you remember the actual metal Tonka trucks that, you know, were made to last centuries.
You still see them sometimes, like at a garage sale or something. And it's like, that's in remarkably good shape for being a 40-year-old toy.
Oh, absolutely. They were built to last. Unlike the plastic garbage they have today. But so I was playing with my Tonka toys in the, I believe it was actually the big dump truck, the yellow dump truck. But I was playing in the dirt, and my grandmother and my parents were sitting on the porch to my right and up, because I was at the base of the stairs of the porch and they were up on the porch. And my grandfather, I guess, was inside, from what my mom says. And so I mind my own business as a four-year-old. My parents are just, and my mom's mom are just, you know, shooting the breeze. And all of a sudden, I hear them start to freak out a little bit, you know, gasps and like, what is that? That kind of thing. Yeah. And I look up, and there are three black triangular craft hovering above us about 150 feet. I mean, close. Mm-hmm. And they're in a triangle formation. So there's three triangles in a triangle formation, and it's the black triangles with the white lights on each corner with a central red light in the middle of each craft. And the red light that's underneath these craft looked as if it was one of those swirling red lava lamps, not the ones with the big bubbles in it, but the type that just kind of swirl and they look, you know, creamy, I guess.
Sure.
And underneath the craft, it had interlocking panels that kind of overlapped a little bit with each other. Almost, you know, I've likened them to the sigils, like Enochian writing. And they're silent. There's no sound coming from them. They're not shifting. I mean, you know, they're not being affected by wind or anything like that. And they're just sitting static above us. Mm-hmm. And my grandmother screamed out, I hope they're not going to hurt us. And, you know, as a four-year-old, I didn't have a point of reference. So to me, I'm just like, ooh, those are pretty cool planes.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah. Everything's new then still. It's like, and anything abnormal is like, well, you're every day going through things you've never experienced at that age. So maybe this is normal. Yeah.
Yeah. This is totally, I guess it's okay. My parents and my grandma are freaking out, but I'm doing pretty good myself.
Yeah.
And they hovered above us for about, oh, I don't know, 45 seconds to a minute. And then they went from above our head to over the horizon in like a blink of an eye. And it they went so fast, it almost looked like they elongated as they shot off. It just, I'm sure it was a visual, you know, just the eyes trying to track, but they were gone. But that night, I was the only lucky or unlucky one, however one would view it. as having an abduction experience. So I remember, my first memory is I'm standing by my bed. The next memory I have is that I'm standing in our living room.
Mm-hmm.
And there are red, green, blue, and white orbs of light just swirling all around the room. And by the way, while these lights are going on, there's this deep thrumming sound, like a generator just going, whoom, 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 that kind of very mechanical sounding, very electrical sounding. And as the thrumming accelerated, the speed of the orbs as they were flying all around the room, and there were probably, to kind of give a visual, there were probably at least 24, if not more, of these orbs. And they were just flying haphazardly all around the room.
Mm-hmm.
And as the thrumming increased into a crescendo, the speed of these orbs increased, and once it reached, you know, max velocity or whatever it was, everything went silent and the room went dark. And out of the middle of the room, which would have been just, I don't know, 3 feet in front of me or so, looking back, a gold orb started to start right in the middle of the room, and it grew out into a door-like. It didn't look like a door, but I'm just saying portal door. But it was the shape of an almond, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And out of this gold light stepped a golden-skinned, golden, like a dark honey-brown-eyed being that looks like the modern description of a gray, but it wasn't gray, a gray alien. It, like I said, it was golden with these beautiful golden eyes, and it didn't have the black over the eyes. I actually saw the pupils, the irises, very beautiful,
mm-hmm.
actually, in retrospect. And it opened its long arms and said, "James, come to me." So right there, you know, whatever these guys were, they knew me by name. So that right there, you know, as an adult looking back, I'm thinking, well, that's kind of creepy. How did they even know my name?
Sure.
You know, I could see just say, "Hey, you, we need to probe you. Come here."
Yeah.
You know, that kind of thing.
Sure.
This loving gesture saying, "James, come with us." And, you know, as a 4-year-old, I thought, well, okay, it sounds fine to me. And you know, looking back at a 4-year-old's logic, you know, you have to think, what the heck were you thinking, boy? You know?
And then you have to go, but I was 4. Back to the conversations in just a moment. First, I want to thank our supporter today, Best Fiends. You can get it today for free on the Apple App Store or Google Play. It is the puzzle game that you will absolutely love. I've been playing this thing now for over a year. It's great. It's I've always called it my mental palate cleanser. Between ghost stories, between work, between news, between everything that's going on, you need a break. And I like taking breaks, but I like taking breaks into things that kind of challenge me and are fun. And Best Fiends, just it fits all of those categories. Whether, you know, it's me like just knowing I'm about to finish this level and you're just there and it's like, yes, did it. And it, you know, it may feel silly, but sometimes you need that on something that is a game that's fun to enjoy and is challenging you mentally. Best Fiends is the infamously impossible to put down puzzle game. Over 100 million downloads and counting on this thing. Free to download, has literally millions of 5-star reviews on the Apple App Store and Google Play. Not much can claim that. And there's more levels, events, and challenging things that get added to this thing all the time. So play away. There's always one more level, really. Seriously, once you download Best Fiends, boredom, it's gone. Even I got my daughter into it as well, and she's loving it too. I mean, you need a break from things, and right now this has been a lifesaver. We all love a good challenge. Best Fiends gives you over 5,000 challenges here. More levels, events, challenges added all the time, which means you're not going to have to choose between binging or boredom. In fact, you might find yourself wondering how you ever found time for a dull moment before once you find this game. Check it out for yourself. Download Best Fiends free today on the Apple App Store or Google Play. That's friends without the R. Best Fiends.
As a four-year-old, you just don't have the brain function to make good decisions. So I said, sure. Mm-hmm. And we spoke without words. I heard his voice clear as a bell, as if he was speaking to me, but his mouth never moved.
Okay.
And he heard my voice clear as a bell without me speaking. So the next memory I have is that this entity and myself are walking in a large room. It's a silver room with multiple long consoles, probably 3-4 long rows of consoles inside a large room with a massive, I couldn't even call it a view screen. It was like the wall itself was a giant video interface of some sort. And he and I were talking. It was he held my hand and we walked through this area, and there were others like him doing whatever on the consoles. And we talked about world changes. He talked about working for the Great King, that the Great King was coming soon, and that the world would go through a lot of changes, basically. It's kind of a abbreviated version of it from the best of my recollection. And then after we were done talking, he escorted me over to this triple seat. So think of like a northwest east kind of configuration to the seating pattern. Mm-hmm. So every 90 degrees there was a seat, except for the back, because that the back was up against a wall with a large silver tube that came in. I was escorted to the middle seat, but there were two other children on the other seats. I don't know who they were or whatnot. From what I recall, they were Caucasian. One was a girl, one was a boy. And they were seated there, and they had like a smaller silver tube that connected to the base of their skull with like a pad on it. So it wasn't invasive, you know, there wasn't blood or anything like that. It just kind of almost like a magnetic attachment to the base of the skull. Mm-hmm. So that it wouldn't hurt the children. And then I was seated on the middle seat and it was attached to me. My next memory is that I'm waking up in my bed and telling my mom about talking to the silver robot guy all night. And, you know, that was my verbiage as a four-year-old. It's the silver robot guy.
Yeah.
Because who knows? But that's what I chose to say. So that was my first journey into the craziness of my life.
That's a good way of putting it. Before we continue on, what was your family saying about your UFO experience? you know, because at the beginning, you had said, I believe you were all together and there was kind of this experience that happened. And then you jumped to your next memory was at another location. What was there when they recollect the beginning of this and them having part of this experience to then all of a sudden you having this experience and recalling that you were essentially abducted, for lack of a better term, maybe that just is the term.
Yeah.
What was their reaction? Did they have any time window that put things into perspective of how long you were gone? Did they even know you were gone? I mean, what was their reaction to this whole thing?
Well, they had no idea I was gone.
Okay.
I was back in my bed.
Yeah.
You know, by the morning.
Yeah.
And I asked all of them about, you know, did you hear anything? Did you see anything? Later on in life, of course, not
sure.
At the age of four. And they said, no, you know, they slept like babies then. But my mom's, so when I told my mom, I talked to the silver robot guy, mm-hmm. her first reaction in, you know, thinking as a parent, I can understand she probably didn't want to spook me because she probably believed I was fearful, which I was not. The whole experience was very pleasant.
Mm-hmm.
And it felt as if I was safe at all times. But my mom's reaction was, oh, you just watch too many sci-fi movies. You're watching that Flash Gordon and you think blah, blah, blah. And you know, as an adult, I'm thinking back and I'm like, Mom, y'all saw these things hovering above us. And I'm telling you they came back and got me. And
yeah.
You're saying, no, you're watching too many sci-fi movies. At four, I haven't watched many sci-fi movies, for God's sake. You know, I'm too busy playing with toys and, you know, whatever. And I know what I know. It is what I experienced. So, and I don't remember my dad's reaction. My grandmother, she was always very quiet when anything paranormal would happen because things happened all the time for her and my mom, back, especially when my mom was a kid. And the funny fact is my mom was actually visited, when she was four by, an entity when she was playing alone on the family property. And she had a full-blown conversation with what she describes as a reptile, entity.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, you know, I couldn't speak for her. So I, other than what she told me, they played, they talked, and then he was just gone. So you know, I have a baby girl, biological baby girl that is going to turn four in January. So for me, I'm wondering, you know, is this a pattern? Do I need to be more attentive throughout the age of four for her and listen to what hopefully she doesn't experience anything and, you know, life goes on fine for her, but, I just don't know.
Let me ask you this, since this almost kind of looks like a pattern with your family, obviously not only just with somewhat of these UFO or alien type reptile type, encounters, but obviously you were talking earlier about the paranormal, the ghostly type area of things as well. You're, and I want to get deeper into that and the connection with all that, but just as a parent, are you concerned that your daughter could experience something at four? And if she does, and let's just assume it's not uber traumatic. It's just kind of like what you had or kind of like what your mother had, where it's just a conversation or a really just kind of weird experience. And she walks away from that and just kind of comes back and talks to you. How are you going to handle that as a parent?
Well, you know, I've actually thought about that. And yeah, it does concern me to an extent.
Mm-hmm.
Because if it's the same type of reaction, interactions that my mom and I had, then she would be safe.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's the biggest concern as a parent is, you know, are my kids safe?
Sure.
So, yes, but it's unknown.
Yeah.
I do believe they would probably, or she would probably be safe. You know, I do have an adopted son that's age 6, but he never experienced anything.
Mm-hmm.
So I've often wondered if it has to do with like bloodlines.
Yeah.
So that's another thing that's kind of, and like I said before, I have a very rare bloodline.
Mm-hmm.
So that might be part of it. But if she told me that, you know, A, B, or C happened, I would tell her, well, you know, my biggest voice of wisdom I could give to her is, you know, don't sweat it. It is what it is, and this is what happened to Daddy when I was 4.
Okay.
You know, I have a very open and honest dialogue with my kiddos all the time.
Sure.
Because I had that with my parents. Mm-hmm. You know, we would all lay on their bed and talk about any topic that I needed to talk about.
Yeah.
Sex, relationships, grades, whatever. It was an open discussion. So, you know, that's pretty much what I would have with my girl.
Sure. And that's good. I mean, obviously everyone has their own style of what they want to do. What's your opinion overall when a child has an experience, that is like this, that like yours or your mother's, or is something more along the lines of, you know, a visitor in the night in their room that is ghostly, that has something to do with, I don't know what it all has to do with, but it's there, and they have that experience and the conversation. And quite often, you know, you were alluding to earlier, you know, maybe your mom kind of played it down because that's what she thought was best for you. Even if she completely believed you, she didn't want to frighten you further. Is that something to the parents out there that listen to this show that may be looking for guidance, because there's not exactly the how to talk to your children about supernatural encounters for dummies at the Walden books? But from someone who's gone through it, is it really kind of a case by case basis, you think, on how you know your child and how you know they would handle it if you view that that, look, you can have that open dialogue. You've already had that open dialogue. It's going to be an okay thing to discuss. Whereas if you kind of come from a family where, look, you don't talk about much of anything that's not like explainable or okay, and everything else is just kind of poo-pooed, it would be kind of strange then suddenly for mom or dad to be like, yeah, it was aliens or it was a fucking ghost, you know?
Yeah.
they may be kind of like, what? Like, you didn't believe that wearing masks was a good thing last week, and now suddenly demons are in my room, Dad? You know, it's one of those things where it's like, do you think it very much depends on the child and how they're how they've been raised as far as jumping into the conversation, whether you believe it or not as a parent, to introduce it as fact?
Sure. You know, I think it's a parent's job to first consider, you know, is what I'm going to say going to create more trauma, potential trauma for the child?
Sure.
Am I going to give them some form of comfort?
Yeah.
I think the worst thing, and it was the worst thing for me when my mom, even though it was probably well-intentioned, mm-hmm. when she did not listen, and I described this to just poo-poo it.
Yeah.
For me, I felt hurt
mm-hmm.
on that. And I've talked to her since then, and she doesn't remember the words she said. She definitely remembers, obviously, the UFO encounters, and my dad did, and my grandma did till they passed away. But, you know, the biggest thing for a parent is to speak with the child's best interests to the best of your ability to bring them safety and comfort, to mm-hmm. make them feel okay.
Sure.
Whatever that would look like, you know, different families have different things, like you pointed out, but really it's about, helping the child to process and to cope.
Yeah.
Because, you know, a lot of things in this world are unexplainable, things that happen to folks on a daily basis, of all different ethnic ethnicities, creeds, races, etc. And so really it's about taking care of the kiddo to the best of your ability, whatever that would look like.
Yeah. I would completely agree. I think it's very much the helping them through it, helping them work through it and be comfortable with what's going on. To some kids, that answer is going to be, yeah, I believe you. Something happened. And to others, it's going to be, oh, it was just a dream. And they'll be cool. It was a dream. I'm moving on. I'm going to go play with, you know, G.I. Joe's now or whatever it is. It all depends on the child. You know, since we're talking about, you know, ghosts and UFOs a little bit here, I know it's a very broad-based question I'm about to ask. But ghosts and UFOs, is there a connection between the two, or is it more so human confusion of things that are just not explained?
You know what? I honestly believe that what people are calling aliens are really just interdimensional beings, and that many times ghosts, what people would classify as a ghost versus an alien encounter, many times the way that the environment and the person reacts to both overlap, so that sometimes what we might think is a ghost could be an interdimensional being like these that I encountered.
Yeah.
Or it could be that it's actually a ghost doing whatever, be it a poltergeist or whatnot. But the same type of reactivity with objects, the orbs, the apparitions. See, because from that age of four onward, that's when I began to see, hear, experience ghostly phenomena.
Yeah.
So, I mean, at five, I saw a dead uncle that I didn't know was dead, and I never knew him, but I just thought it was grandpa's friend, and he just looked over my bed where I was sleeping and smiled at me and then disappeared. Come to find out later when I described him, it was my dead uncle Boss, who had died several years prior to the event. And they called him Boss. I forget what his actual name was, but so the spiritual encounter and the shadow people I've seen ever since I was probably four or five as well, but I've seen other things as well. I remember one time seeing this glowing orb of energy that seemed to crackle, and it had these small tendrils of electrical charge that came out of it, that appeared, and I'm just staring, looking at it dead on, and then it disappears. What my feeling at the time and still is that it was more of an angelic kind of visitation, because it felt pure and it felt good, versus the shadow people, which typically inspire terror and fear. So, you know, that's really a lot of these things overlap. And so it's really, to understand exactly what it is, we may never, but you can get indications on the behaviors. Really, it's about behavior, not effect. That would determine, you know, exactly what am I experiencing.
Sure. Do you think the UFO encounter opened your senses to the supernatural as a whole, or was it just kind of the timing of it? Around that time, you were just kind of starting to become more aware of all these things. Had you had that that encounter with the UFO or not, you would still be experiencing what you did beyond that was more ghostly. Or did that turn, like, flip a switch or heighten some sort of sense for you?
Well, you know, I've actually thought about that. The short answer is I don't know. But the longer answer is, if it was just happenstance and odd timing, it would make less sense to me. Because it was from that moment onward that my life changed drastically. So I have to still throw that into the gray area where, you know, honestly, I don't know if that was the catalyst for what people would call psychic ability. Because for myself, I'll know things when they're going to happen. I can go to a location and see the entire history of a place. I can touch certain objects and get the history off of an object. I can, there are times, you know, because I'm also a mental health therapist as well as a substance counselor, as well as the superior for the Order of Exorcists with the Advent Catholic Church. So I wear multiple hats.
Sure.
And my train of thought just went to the next station.
Let me ask you this: when you have something like that, and you said, you know, you touch an object, you can know the history of it. You're able to almost just get this information. I'm always curious about that as to how that information is delivered to individuals with this ability. Is it the way I try to describe it on the show when people ask me, because I don't have this ability, but I've heard of it from thousands of people. So I believe people have this happen. We operate on the standpoint on our programs of, we believe you. I just want to understand what you're going through and how it feels. What is it like? So is it the way I try and describe it is almost like a download where, you know, you can download a whole book, but you didn't read that book in order to download it. It's just there. Then you can access it at will. Is that kind of how it is when you, if let's say you're going through an antique store and somebody, you pick up an object and boom, you're kind of getting this information. Is it like, is someone standing there that's connected with the object delivering the information to you? Or is it more of the download type thing? How would you describe it?
It's more similar to the download concept.
Okay.
So for me personally, I will see, so the flash of imagery and sound and everything is but a moment. I mean, it's just a flicker.
Mm-hmm.
But when I concentrate on it, I can then broaden it out so that it's like a movie that's being played.
Okay.
So it's like an instant download, but then I can, you know, hit the play button and
yeah.
It'll go.
Then you get it in its full. Yeah, you can really see it.
Yeah. And I'll see the people, the places, the things that were going on, that kind of thing.
Go
for it.
I was going to say, let me throw this at you because I'm curious about that with objects. Does this occur with any object, like anything that you get? You put your hands on or that you're near that you have an interest in, or somebody says, what do you think of this? Or does it have to have some sort of history to it? So, for example, an old radio that sat on top of a refrigerator in someone's house since 1920, been kind of passed down through the generations, seen a lot in somebody's home. That obviously has a long history with it. It's been there versus the reproduction that they just picked up at the Costco that looks a lot like it, but its life has been 3 months since the factory it came out of and who knows where. When you touch that, when you feel that, do you get the history of, well, this was manufactured in Taiwan versus, well, this was in this house and I can kind of give you a kind of what I'm feeling of where it's been.
Well, so I will say from the get-go that I've learned how to turn my abilities off.
Okay.
So unless I willingly turn them on and concentrate, it won't happen. Unless it's a very haunted object, which I've dealt with in the past as an exorcist. The initial thing I'll get from an object is the feeling. The emotional feeling that's attached to the object. So if it's a haunted object, I'll get this this pit in my gut, this feeling of dread, sometimes sadness, sometimes anger, that kind of thing. But for the most part, you know, unless I'm on a case and with my exorcism team, I try not to turn what I call my radar on too often, because I just don't want to be inundated with stuff.
Okay.
And so I couldn't even teach this.
No, you know, no.
It's just something I learned.
Yeah,
to be able to control.
Understandable. I mean, understandable for us, ununderstandable as it can be. You know, you're doing a great job, you know, explaining how you process all of these things. And that's where we're going to pause our conversation in part two of the conversation with James Cloud. We'll ask, do all objects give off some sort of feeling or energy? Shadow people inspire fear and terror in many. Is it a warranted or unwarranted reaction? What was James' most terrifying encounter with a shadow person? As an exorcist, are there ever cases where there's simply no way to fully remove the dark energy? And what's more dangerous to a human, an attachment or possession? We'll dive into all of that and more in the second half of our conversation with James Cloud. To hear it, become a gravekeeper. That's a supporter of our program. Those are the folks who keep us on the air. $5 a month gets you access to all of our conversations, every single interview in their entirety, part one, part two, hundreds of them waiting for you right now at patreon.com/thegravetalks, or go to thegravetalks.com and click become a gravekeeper. It's only $5 a month. In addition to having our entire archive at your listening disposal, you'll also get access to advanced episodes of the program, oftentimes months before the release to the public. It's all there. Patreon.com/thegravetalks or thegravetalks.com. Click become a gravekeeper. Be sure to check out James's book on Amazon, Walking with Ghosts, an exorcist memoir of the paranormal. And for more on his group, you can search the Paranormal Research Investigators of St. Michael. Until next time, for all of us at The Grave Talks, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org. One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org. One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Thank you.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.